I'm Terry, I'm an addict. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you to the meeting. Thank you, everyone who does service at this meeting. Thank you, Tash, for asking me, I think. And thanks, Alison, for a brilliant share. You know, I was trying really hard to really listen and not just be up in my head about my upcoming share, and I did, and I heard a lot of stuff that I identified with and really really liked, but of course now it's all gone out of my head because my head's going about 1,000 miles an hour because I'm self-obsessed, and that was one of the things that you spoke about, being self-obsessed. So there you go, that's a definite piece of identification. Hugely self-obsessed. It's the center of my illness, and even now it doesn't seem to have dissipated after 10 and a half years of clean time, a bit longer of being in the rooms. If anything, I'm just much more aware of it than I was before, but it's not gone away at all. I'm gonna try it, because I normally end up doing quite a lot of about my experience and then have to rush the bit about recovery at the end. So I'm gonna try not to do that. I'm timing myself so that I can, hopefully I can, time management would be a little bit better, but we'll see. I'm so nervous, and someone mentioned earlier, you know, I'm a performer for a living, but this is not the same as that. And this is the most nervous I ever get, because this is truth, you know, and my ego wants me to tell a story and, you know, to put on a show and look good, but that's not what this is about. I've only got one story, so I've got to tell that one. So I've been an addict all my life. Yeah. I now know that. I didn't know that before. Since I can remember, I've always had addictive thinking, and that's where I've operated from, even though I now also know that my using career sort of started much later than a lot of other people that are here in the rooms. It's always been with me. And when I was a kid, when I was a kid, you know, my first drugs of choice, if you like, or no choice, were food and fantasy. Those were the things that I used to change the way that I felt. I had no idea that's what I was doing, but that is what I was doing. I've got a couple of really clear memories that I always share, but it just gives an insight into sort of where I was then. I remember being very young, about 7 years old. And I was in the dinner hall at school, and I was feeling really low and upset, probably because I seem to remember I've been called something in the playground. It probably, ironically, fatty or something like that. And the way I chose to deal with that was to sit in the dinner hall and eat 3 dinners and 2 puddings, because you could just keep going up and they kept serving you, you know. It was the early 80s. They didn't know any better. And I ate more food than any adult could possibly want to eat. What I was doing, I now understand, I was stuffing my feelings down, and it worked a treat. You know, it did the job. It did what it said on the tin. And I continue to do that, you know, and food has been a big part of my addiction. So I'll keep coming back to that. So I'm sorry if anyone kind of doesn't identify with that, but it's part of my story. It's part of my addiction. So I have to talk about it. I can't leave it out. The story about fantasy, you know, I was, and still am, still can be, I get so caught in my head, such a daydreamer, that I don't even know what's going on in the outside world around me. And again, very young, I got left on the school coach coming back from swimming because I was in such a daydream that everyone got off the coach and I didn't even know they'd gone. And the coach driver was on the way back to the depot when I sort of came to. And I got in such trouble, and they said I'd hidden on the coach. The dinner ladies. The dinner ladies did everything back then. I don't know, you know, they did everything. And they told me off something chronic. And I was crying and saying, I didn't hide. I just was off with the fairies, you know. But they didn't believe me. But anyway, like that was me when I was a kid, you know. I was just, I wasn't really ever present. And I was using this stuff to change the way that I felt. And I always felt less than. I was a chubby little kid, and I got picked on because of that. And I was so sensitive. I took it really to heart. And So then, you know, the fantasy side of things became my outlet. I got into drama. My mum sort of, I came home from secondary school, my first year of secondary school. I said, I really like this drama. You know, I like getting up there and making the kids laugh. I like that. You know, another drug, really, you know, the praise that I got, the adoration, you know, being the center of attention. And she was like, oh, okay. And so she said, she got me involved in this drama group after school because, you know, she wanted to keep me off the streets. That was her kind of and that was it. I came home after doing the first show that I'd sort of in front of an audience and said, that's it, I'm going to be an actor. And she said, oh, no, what have I done? And it hasn't changed since then. You know, I was like 12. And, you know, but there was no sort of drugs in my life really when I was that, you know, when I was young. I should just go, but my family life was really good, except for the fact that my mum and dad split up when I was about 3 years old, and my dad was an addict, and I didn't know that at the time. I used to see him every weekend, and he'd smoke these funny smelling cigarettes in front of me, and I didn't really know what that was about. But and he'd talk to himself a lot, and he'd badmouth my mum a lot. And then we moved out to Romford from East London when I was 9 years old, and then I kind of stopped seeing him. He made a decision. I now realised that he didn't want to see me anymore for whatever reason. I had a stepfather and another man in my life who was very straight going and has been a godsend for me, actually. And I'll come back to that later. But anyway, yeah, it kind of tailed off me seeing him then. And, you know, he was a black cab driver, so he had transport. He'd made a decision that he wasn't going to drive the half an hour out to Romford to pick me up. And anyway, I had an estranged relationship with him up until I was 21. He was 50 and he died, which was a bolt from the blue. And yeah, I'll come back to that later. Anyway, I went through my teenage years. I had this stuff with food that developed into an eating disorder, which again, you know, I'm sorry if anyone doesn't relate to this, but this is all part of my addiction. I developed bulimia when I was 16. I'd lost a load of weight. I was yo-yo dieting all the way through, and I lost a load of weight, and I went out for a meal for my 16th birthday with the family, and I, you know, Chinese, stuffed myself, stupid, felt sick, went to the toilet, put my fingers down my throat, and it's funny because at that stage I hadn't taken any Class A drugs, but the rush that I got from that, the buzz that I got from that, I now realise was like doing a big line of Charlie, you know, it was that control that I felt in that moment. And then that was where my using was at that point. You know, I remember drinking early, smoking a spliff, having really bad reactions and thinking, I ain't going to do that again. And I didn't for quite a few years. I didn't need it. I had other drugs of choice, if you like. Anyway, I went to drama school. I left home, and that's where my drug using set off, really sort of started. It was alcohol and weed at first, and marijuana, you know, those were all that was on the menu at that point. But I'd do them all the time, every opportunity. I fell in with the bad lads, you know, straight away. I was attracted to the naughty boys. And, you know, we'd go back after class every day, and we'd smoke and we'd drink. We'd go to the bar and drink a few beers, and we'd go back and we'd smoke. I'd be sick all the time, projectile vomiting. It never agreed with me, but I kept doing it. I kept trying. And then I left drama school, and I got an agent, and I got into a TV show almost on leaving. You know, all my dreams come true overnight, and suddenly I was earning good money. I was 22 years old, and quite a few, and I'm not blaming anything on anyone because it's my own choices, quite a few people on this show were at it, sniffing and popping pills, and I'd always been quite scared of that stuff. You know, I'd been a little bit sheltered from that stuff growing up. I don't know if you remember Leah Betts. She was 15. She died. And there was this whole big thing. She was from Essex. So there was a whole big thing around it. And I thought, if you take ecstasy, you die. That's what happens. Do you know what I mean? But they seem to be all right. So and they seem like they're having a good time. So I thought, yeah, I'll give that a go. And, you know, I did. I remember my first pill and my first line, both like they were yesterday, and both the same reaction. Like, where have you been all my life? This is it. I've arrived. This is how I want to feel all the time, day in, day out. I don't ever want to feel any different to this. I was on this TV show at the time, and so I couldn't kind of indulge it as much as I wanted to right from the very beginning. But as soon as I left that, I did. And I had money that I'd sort of saved, but then I just spent it, and I spent it all on my mates as well. You know, really big bollocks, you know, come on, let's all go out and get on it. And then at sort of a year or so later after that, I had nothing on a massive tax bill. I ended up back in my parents' house, bankrupt. I ended up doing a teaching course that I never wanted to do. Ended up being a teacher in a school. It was just a matter, and I ended up with a woman, and then we never got on. It was a really sick relationship, all based around drugs. And I ended up having a kid with her. I'm glossing over a lot of stuff here to try and kind of get to the sort of meat of the story. And we split up when he was very small, and we were never right for each other. And I was then in the midst of my using, and by then I kind of knew that my dad was also an addict, and I just saw history repeating itself right in front of my eyes. I was like, I'm doing the exact same thing is happening. And I didn't want that. And I went to my parents, my mum and my stepdad, and I said, look, I'd been to them the year before with the exact same situation. I owed money to drug dealers and I couldn't pay it. And I said, I owe this money. And the first time I'd been to them, I said, and if you just sort me out, I'll never do it again. I promise I'll never do it again. And I meant it, but I had no idea what I was up against. Year later, I went back to them. I said, look, I've done it again. I owe this money. And I ain't going to tell you I'm not going to do it again because I can't stop. And I don't know what to do. So I was in bits. I was crying. I'm feeling emotional now, remembering it. Because I was broken. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't stop. And my stepdad, who's a wonderful man and very lucky to have him, he said, all right, well, look, we'll sort that out. Don't worry about that. And he said, I know this fella. I worked with him. He worked in the city, insurance. And he said, I know this fella. His name's Kevin. He goes to these meetings. He's a great guy. He used to be a heroin addict, but he ain't done nothing for 20 years. He ain't taken no drugs. He didn't say things like clean and all that because he didn't know those words. He just said he ain't done no drugs for 20 years, and he helps people when he goes to these meetings. Do you want to go to one of these meetings? Feeling choked up. But you never expect this to come, do you, when you start to remember these things? But I just said, yeah, I didn't hesitate. I just went, yeah. Because I was, you know, I had the gift of desperation, you know, I was done. Well, I wasn't quite done actually, but I was broken, and I went, yeah, please. So I think the next day or maybe the day after that, he took me down. I met this fella called Kevin. He was a lovely, lovely man. Funny man, so loving. And he's since passed away. It's very, very sad. He passed away. He had a brain, blood clot in his brain, and it burst and he died. And he was 54. Very, very sad. But he'd helped so many people before that, you know, and I was one of those people that he helped. And he took me to that meeting. And I remember sharing in that meeting, and I said, I'm Terry, I'm an addict. And I got emotional because I said, I've got a name for what I am, you know, why I'm doing this, why I'll keep behaving like this and acting this way. So so then I went to meetings, and I went to meetings, but I never did anything else. You know, I didn't want to do any of the work. I got 8 months clean. I got an acting job. I went up to Edinburgh, and I was, you know, I stayed clean the last day of Edinburgh. I mean, if you're going to relapse, should have done it on the first day, shouldn't I? I mean, stupid. But anyway, I used all sorts of, I got my mum to sanction my relapse. I said, oh, mum, I can't talk to girls, you know, like, and I want to be able to talk to girls. And drink was never my problem, so that's all right, innit, you know? And she was like, yeah, of course it's, because she don't know anything about it. And so I got her to give me the go-ahead. So then I went out and I smashed it up for a bit and came back, tail between my legs. And then I did exactly the same thing. I got a few months cleaner. I went and I decided to get into stand-up comedy, and I started doing a bit of that. I had a good gig one night, and I decided when I went up to the bar that rather than get a soft drink, I'd buy a pint, you know? And then I tried to do controlled drinking for a while, and I kind of worked. And then when I relapsed on coke with my drug of choice, there's a cat here that's trying to, don't get on this laptop. I hadn't even had a drink that night because I'd proved to myself, right, that I'm not an addict, you know, it's just pure insanity. Then the third time I went back, I went to a meeting and I met this fella who is a very good friend of mine now still. And he was doing 90 and 90. He was kind of two thirds of the way through. And he said, look, how about doing 90 and 90? I'll do it with you. And he needed wheels at the time because he couldn't drive. He was banned from driving. He said his missus was taking him everywhere. So he said, look, you get me to the meetings and we'll do it together. And so that's what we did. And I got loads of service positions. I got right in the middle of the boat. And, you know, first year of recovery, that's all I did was that. And my life just changed, you know, and I had so many problems with my boy's mum, my ex. And I managed to just keep my cool and sort all those things out only because of recovery, you know. And now I see him pretty much every weekend. I speak to him every day on the phone, whether he likes it or not. We've got a great relationship. He's 13 years old now. By that stage of my life, my relationship with my dad had completely broken down. You know, my relationship with my son is very, very strong. And it's just because of this. There's nothing else to it. You know, I've come back to acting. I've got an acting career again. But I'm very aware that recovery is where it's at. And I have to put this first. And there's been times recently, you know, when I haven't put this first. Sorry, you can hear that. There's a puppy in the background. That's who's crying. We've got a dog and a cat. Don't ever do that. That's my advice. But anyway, I haven't done that, always put recovery first. You know, I put my career first and other things, you know, and I've got a relationship in recovery, and she's also in, you know, one of us. And it's not always easy, but when I put this stuff first, you know, I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams. My perspective just changes. You know, I'm doing 90 and 90. I'm on the fifth day of my 90 and 90 because I've been in real pain recently. I won't go into all the reasons, but there's been a lot of stuff going on in my head. And just 5 days later, doing a meeting every day for 5 days, I feel so much better, you know? What I've managed to do, no matter what, I don't pick up. That's number one. I do not pick up. As long as I get to bed and I ain't picked up, even if I've been a total so-and-so throughout the day, don't get me wrong, that isn't ideal, but even if I have, I can do something about that the next day. As long as I don't pick up. You know, if I pick up, all bets are off. Everything's done. I'm done for, you know? And my eating disorder, it's a massive part of my disease. It's the same disease. As far as I'm concerned, it's the same disease. It comes out in different ways for different people, you know, and that's one of the ways it comes out for me. I got into recovery. I got clean of drugs. But, you know, drugs is a straight choice. You know, I either use or I don't. Food, you've got to make choices around that stuff every single day. And I didn't think I could ever get a day clean from my illness around food. And I don't do it anymore. I don't do that anymore. I just work my program around it. And now I'm like, what the hell? How could I do that? How was I doing that? You know, that insane behavior, I never thought I could stop, but I just worked 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, a 12-step program around that, around my food. I got there, went and sought the help that I needed to get. Thank you, acknowledged. It works if you work it, you know. And I haven't always worked it, so it hasn't always worked. Except I haven't picked up. That's the one thing that I've made sure. My step one's very strong, and I do not pick up one day at a time. But now I'm 10 years clean, and I want a bit more. Thank you. I want a bit more. I want to be happy, joyous, and free, not restless, irritable, discontent, you know. And it's there for me if I want it, and I know that. And I've been a bit slack of late. This meeting's been a godsend for me. What Alison was saying about, you know, I'm glad it's not the in the room, you know. I remember going to this meeting early doors and being like, bloody hell, like this is incredible. You know, I'm used to my little Essex meetings, and but it's a real privilege to share here. And it's a privilege to be part of the committee here. And when I came on this meeting the first time, I was like really struggling. I was doing one meeting a week, which I'd service at. So I suppose they're sort of getting me to that meeting. And then I sort of came to this meeting. I was like this, you know, I remembered it from doing it live, and was just like, yeah, this is a great meeting. And when service came out, I was like, yes, I need to get involved with this, because this is what I need. This is where it's at. I think I've said it all, you know. My relationship with my son, you know, like I said, my dad passed away when I was 21. He was 51. He just turned 51. I hadn't seen him for 2 years when he died. Got a phone call out of the blue from my nan in bits, and just, you know, where have you been? And, you know, and I went to his funeral, and, you know, I was crying. I was crying along with everybody else. But I was crying because I didn't really know him, you know. I was crying for the relationship that I should have had with him. And I always get emotional, but I say this, but this is the truth. You know, if I keep doing this, when my son comes to my funeral, which hopefully won't be when I'm 51, you know, because I ain't too far away. But when he does, you know, he'll be crying because he misses his dad, and that's it. Yeah. So, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. If you got nothing out of what I shared, yeah, and if you're a newcomer and you're new around, just keep coming back. just keep coming back and you will hear your story. There you go, there's the timer. You will hear your story and, you know, the miracle will happen. You just got to stick around till it does. I'll leave it there. Thank you.